Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 5 of the OI, an Offside Hockey Talk podcast. I'm joined this evening by Kevin Killer Kaminsky, former Halifax Citadel in the AHL. Killer, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, Jamie. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm located here in the beautiful province of Nova Scotia. And how's Saskatchewan doing right now with COVID?
Well, we're kind of, well, we're not all shut down, but hockey shut down right now. So we'll hopefully have some good news on January 15th when they come up with the different, regulations or restrictions. And hopefully we can get back playing. Everything was going good. We were at 150 fan base at night. Everyone had to send in their protocols to Sask Health, and it was all authorized by Dr. Shahab. And we hadn't had one case, with the fans or anything. There wasn't one case in Melford, but it never spread. They caught it and they did the right protocol. And so it's just unfortunate that, that we did have to shut down due to COVID. But like I said, hopefully numbers decrease and we can get back playing the game that we love.
This episode will drop in the new year. It was scheduled January 8th, I believe, for the WHL. And now it's pushed back with no timetable for a WHL return. Do you have an idea if the WHL will start in January or maybe in February? What's your take on a possible start date for the WHL?
Well, I think if anything, like you said, we won't know the restrictions to the 15th, for the SJHL, but I know the dub has it, a little bit different because they have teams in all over, right? So they got Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC, and then the States. So with SJHL, everyone's in Saskatchewan and Manitoba. It's crazy. Manitoba Flin Flon, the Bombers, old Bobby Clark and Reggie Leach days, their one corner of the rink is in Saskatchewan and then the rest of it's in Manitoba. So they only play two games and because the majority of the rinks in Manitoba, so they couldn't they wouldn't let them play when Manitoba was shut down completely. So that part. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether we get going. I think the dub has a lot more red tape to go through, but it's weird because, talk about the mental health and you go to the schools, you got 1200 kids in school and then they keep going. And, we only had 150 fans in the rink and now they want us to go to zero and the schools keep going. So if we go to zero fans, well, then let's get going. I just don't understand the whole different aspects of, okay, well, let's keep school going. It's for their mental health and it's not coming. The cases aren't inside the school. They're coming from outside the school. But we haven't had one case with 150 fans yet. We get shut down and schools keep going. So it just baffles my mind that all these regulations and things that are open and we get shut down.
I have a friend in Ontario. He covers the OHL and 2,000 cases or so each day in Ontario. Do you see a possible bubble happening in the WHL in Edmonton? We're going to see World Juniors happening in the Edmonton bubble. Do you see the OHL going to Toronto and playing in the Air Canada Center in Air Canada Center bubble? Do you see that happening maybe with the WHL?
Well, I think it's going to be way too expensive for the teams. The owners are going to lose their shirts, man. The World Juniors is a whole different story. I mean, you got, they got the TV revenue, which is going to be huge. I mean, everyone, I can't wait for to watch World Juniors. I mean, it's been so long since you watch hockey, right? So, I mean, the ratings are going to be astronomical this World Juniors, because like I said, I think everyone is waiting to finally watch some hockey in Canada here. So, but I just don't think it's feasible. I could be wrong, but I don't think it's feasible for the WHL, the OHL, the Quebec, unless they get some federal funding.
Sorry to cut you off there, Kevin. The QMHL, Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, did get some funding from the Quebec government, but there were some additional rules in place, you know, fighting rules. And I got the privilege to go to a couple of Mooseheads games this year, and you know, a guy got into a fight with another player, and he was given a 5-minute major plus a 10-minute misconduct. Three fights in 1 year, I believe. I think then there's a suspension, so there was a bit of uncertainty at the beginning whether the Q was going to actually happen. But then the Q government, or the Quebec government, stepped in and did give the Q some money. But then there were some additional rules that we're not used to, because I've grew up watching Q hockey in the 90s and the 2000s, and you know, fighting was a thing. I know around 2005 fighting dropped off a lot. You do see it here and there, but now it's more of like a Tom Wilson guy that can actually score 20 goals and drop the gloves at the same time. So yeah, hockey has definitely changed. And I did see some of your interview with Rod Peterson and how hockey has changed from when you played in the 80s and the 90s, and now it's a whole different game. We'll get into that a bit later, but yeah, with some government funding, hey, it may happen. There may be a bubble. I know when I lived in Calgary, the Calgary Hitmen, I don't know if they still do, but they played their games at the time when Pogge played for the Hitmen. They played at the Calgary Saddle Dome. So, hey, maybe they could kind of see it working, because Calgary did play in that Saddle Dome. I know a couple years ago, the Ottawa 67s played in the Canadian Tire Center, the home of the Ottawa Senators, because their facility was being repaired. So can you see it happening if the government drops some money into Saskatchewan?
Well, I mean, the government's going to have to come up big time. I mean, because if you're going to do this, if you're going to fund it, obviously there's probably going to be no fans, right? So, you know, so if you go into a bubble where, let's say everyone goes to where Rod Peterson is, Regina. Well, I mean, you have hotels for 3 months long. You got meals for 3 months long. I mean, that's a big time expense. You know, I hope it does, because I want to see hockey get going. But
definitely this prospect. You definitely want to see prospects, players prove themselves. And yes, we'll see players prove themselves over the World Juniors. But you had Shane Wright's not playing in the World Juniors, a player that we wanted to see, especially out here in the East. Shane Wright plays, I believe, for the Kingston Frontenacs. And we want to see Connor Bedard. Rod Peterson had a little thing on him, and that kid's going to be a real treat to watch. And we won't get to see him now play for, you know, maybe all of this year. Who knows? So, right.
Yeah, it's baffling. I mean, like you said, I hope all of hockey can get going again, and you know, get back to the game that we love and enjoy the, you know, to get back to, again, the camaraderie, the mental side of it too, to get out, to have your, be with your friends all the time and have some fun while you play and get the exercise. I mean, but like I said, I'm just one person. Maybe I should have been a doctor, but you know, have to follow the rules, I guess, and I just I just don't understand them. That's all.
And we feel the same way out east. Even though you guys are in Saskatchewan, I have connections in BC, and hey, the Vancouver Canucks might not even be able to play in BC right now. There's a lot of talk, and one positive that came out of this week is, yes, the NHL is going to start January 13th with the Canadian teams playing in the North, and then you have three other divisions. So that's positive news, but hey, who knows what will happen from now until January 13th. We'll touch up on the NHL in a little bit, but I want to see WHL hockey. I've never been connected as much as I have been in the last couple months. I'm a huge WHL fan. Last 2019, when the Prince Albert Raiders were here in the Mem Cup, and Mark Habscheid, and those guys are such great people to deal with. And then I became a WHL fan. So I can feel you. I really want to see you guys play. We had the privilege to play hockey. We played six games here in the Maritimes, junior A's playing. But hey, it's basically now from South Shore down to Yarmouth can play each other, and then all the way up towards like Truro and some of the places in New Brunswick are able to play. Central Nova Scotia has really been on severe lockdown as far as going to the rinks and playing, and it's too bad because you see a lot of teams playing, but hey, we're not playing. But Health Canada's put these things into place, and we can talk till we're blue in the face. And I find Rod Peterson a very good source on, you know, just getting his point across and just making sure we don't get frustrated. And he's just, we could talk about, hey, should we be playing? Should we not be playing? We could be talking about this for days, but for right now, let's just kind of stay safe, enjoy the holidays. And I really hope for your guys' sake in January that you guys are playing, because every day I went to the rink, you know, I felt bad that my friends in BC couldn't be playing. You guys in Saskatchewan couldn't be playing. And even in Ontario, I have relatives and my parents are in Ontario. So it's very trying times, but hey, let's just, you know, stay positive, especially during the holidays. And I want to move away from junior hockey for a little bit and get your take on the NHL. Yes, it's been announced the seven Canadian teams are part of the North Division. Where do you see teams like Vancouver playing? It's been talked about Vancouver might have to play in Saskatchewan. How crazy would it be if Vancouver played games at the SaskTel Center? Is that the correct arena for the Blades?
Yes. Yeah.
So how crazy would it be for Vancouver to be playing in Saskatoon?
Yeah, I you know, who knows what's going to happen here? I mean, you know, you hear all the Canadian teams might have to move to the States. You know, again, it's kind of like COVID right now. Just like, you can speculate all you want, but you don't know, I guess, until the NHL comes up with a decision. So, but yeah, it might be a possibility that Vancouver might be, maybe playing in Saskatoon here. So, now, is that going to be good for the fans? Because I'm probably not, because it's probably going to be playing in front of empty crowds. So that's the crazy part. But, the NHL has a pretty good handle on things. And I think they're going to have trouble starting on the 13th as well, just with there's so many cases everywhere that, you know, but who knows? They've got a lot more money to deal, work with, and lots of, you know, TV rights and everything else. So, and I know the owners want to play, the players want to play, but time will tell.
Well, there's also a time difference from Saskatchewan to Vancouver, so I don't think the people in Vancouver are going to be pleased with the time difference when they're used to seeing their team play in Vancouver time. I believe it's Pacific time, so it's going to be an adjustment. There's going to be no fans. So really, I think it doesn't really matter where they play, as long as, you know, the seven teams in the Canadian division do play. And I want to see it, Vancouver and Toronto. I want to see them play five or six times. I don't want to see each team play nine times. I know a 56 game schedule may have teams playing about eight or nine times. I like to see it around 48 games. I don't like the 56 games they have in place. I like to see a 48, and then it makes the Canadian teams play each other maybe around six times or so, not the eight or nine times that they may end up playing each other. But just give me your top seven. What's your take on the top seven? Where do you see each team finishing at the end of the 56 games in the All-Canadian division?
Oh gosh, I you know what, I have trouble keeping up with my own league. Never mind the NHL and what they're trying to do. Obviously you want the Canadian teams to do well. Hopefully all of them can have a good showing. I think Ottawa's obviously on the rebuild, and I think Toronto hopefully has learned and goes along a little bit farther. And I think Edmonton's ready to make that next step. I think Vancouver's same thing. I think they're ready to make the next step. So, it's going to be definitely interesting to see where the Canadian teams fall into place once the regular season gets going.
This episode will drop the first week of January, about a week or so before the actual January 13th start date. And I've talked to people from Sportsnet, TSN, and Rod's had some guests on as well to kind of give people an understanding of when the NHL might start. And I agree with a lot of guests he's had on and a lot of people I've spoken to with Sportsnet and TSN, and they say around the February 5th, that week, that we may see the NHL start. So again, like, you could talk about the NHL starting and what may happen in the next month before January 13th actually is here until you're blue in the face. So I'm really done, you know, talking about this situation, and I just want to, you know, again, stay positive. And for you, don't you want to see your team be playing in January?
Well, definitely, yeah. I mean, well, we're going on to the 15th, so hopefully we can get going here around February 1st, where guys come back. You know, got to get them kind of back in shape and get them going again. So, and are they going to have to isolate? Are they not going to have to isolate? So who knows? But like I said, we'll see what happens on the 15th. And I know it'd just be nice to play a 20 game schedule for us and hopefully playoffs. We want to put, every team has 20 year olds that are looking to go to college next year, or some might turn pro. We need to play those 20 games and get those guys scholarships, and then we can move on from there.
Just tell the offside viewers about your junior team and what you do with that team.
Yeah, my I recruit, it's 16 to 20 years old. These kids, if they play in the dub, then their kind of college career is kind of shot, especially in the States. So a lot of these kids that are really good, book smart and can play, you know, they come and play for us, and then they move on to whether it's Division One or Division Three college, or youth sport or whatever it is in Canada. That's our goal, is to develop these kids throughout their career in junior, and move them along to you know, again, scholarships in the States and scholarships in Canada. You know, I think it was 8 out of our 10, 20-year-olds last year got scholarships. So that's what it's all about. We want to make that a statement for LaRonge Ice Wolves hockey that we're here to develop, and we want to move you guys on to the next level and get a degree in college.
Yeah, just looking up your status with the LaRonge Ice Wolves. Thank you for pronouncing that. I wasn't going to be able to pronounce that team name, LaRonge Ice Wolves. You're the GM head coach in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League. So, yeah, we've been playing down here, and we have the one Ontario kid that may play in January or February, but for you guys, it's a little different story. It's a totally different league. But when do you guys see? When do you see your team playing? Like, when do you think you'll see ice time? Like, I know we're back to practicing with no more than 25 kids on the ice. That includes two coaches and myself, part of the hockey operations here with the local junior team. But when do you see your guys getting on the ice? I hope it's sometime in January, but when do you see your team back on the ice?
Well, you know, like I said, January 15th is going to be the big date with the Sask Health giving us new restrictions. And if hockey's going to be back, if it's not going to be back, you know, hopefully it'll be January 15th. And then the guys will have, you know, 3 or 4 days to get to their teams and wherever they're going, Yorkton, Melville, Estevan, Melfort, Flin Flon, LaRonge, whatever it is. And then, you know, practice for 10 days or whatever, then hopefully we can get going, like you said, with the 25 game schedule and go from there. So, but I said, we can't even practice. We can't do anything until January 15th.
How are the bus rides? I've spoken to a few people who cover each team in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, and they're a tad bit younger than you are, but how are you on the bus rides? Like, how, I know we don't take the bus in the Maritimes here with the team I'm with, it's, you know, within a 2-hour drive. So we're not on the bus very much. I'm just curious of how the bus rides are through the prairies of Saskatchewan.
I think the longest bus drive is 8 hours, which is absolutely nothing. I mean,
once you're used to it, I guess you really, it just seems like nothing. But like for us, we're 2 hours from each, 2 hours on this side, 2 hours on the other side for each contest. I know when you get to the junior A level, it's a bit further. I'm in the B level, so we really don't need a bus for 2 hours. So I was just curious how the bus rides are in the prairies.
Well, it can, depending on the weather, it can be very chilly if it's minus 40 and the wind chill maybe blowing at minus 55. So like you said, it's, you know, we got stuck once this year in preseason going to Flin Flon. So Flin Flon, Nipawin and Melfort, which is our division, they're all 3.5 hours. Humboldt's 5, Battleford's 5, and then I think Yorkton, Melville, which is where my dad is, areas from, is like 7 hours away. And then, like I said, Estevan's is the farthest, I think, at 8. So, you know what? I've been on the bus my whole life. Took a little break, I guess, when I played in the NHL and took some planes, which was nice. But I'm used to it. I enjoy it. I know I'm getting older, but you get a lot of work done and you can take a few cat naps here and there and just get prepared for the game. And, you know, like I said, you're being on the bus with the boys is, again, that camaraderie. You hear them chirping back there and having fun. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, like I said, my passion and just the dedication for the game for me is absolutely nonstop. I mean, it's the brain never shuts down. It's always go, go, go on hockey. And, that's the way I'm wired, and the fire's what still, I do. And like I said,
the fire
21
still
in, years coaching,
the fire's still in your belly. And I got the exact same. I'm the exact same way. I'm at the junior B level, but hey, you know, if you want to move up, or if you find the right team and, you know, you gel and everything works out in that organization, you want to see championships, and you never want to stop. And I got the same problem. Well, I wouldn't say it's a problem. I got the same thing going on. I just got a passion for the game, and hey, who knows in X amount of years where I'll end up. But I do want to visit Saskatchewan and someday. I've never visited Saskatchewan. I was almost tempted in 2013 when the Halifax Mooseheads won the Memorial Cup at in Saskatoon. I didn't get
at that game.
I'll ask you about that here shortly. But I never got to make that trip. I think I was working at the time, and really in the last couple months since COVID, I've really now settled in Halifax, and giving back to the local team is a great feeling, and that's not going to change for a very long time. But and you being from Saskatchewan, giving back to the community, there's no better feeling. And we do have one weekend trip to Cape Breton. I know you're familiar with Cape Breton because you played with the Citadels, and might have had some trips up there. I think Cape Breton was Cape Breton in the league. Cape Breton Oilers in the league, yep, with the Citadels. Okay, so you would know the Cape Breton Nova Scotia trip. Yeah, and my girlfriend's from Cape Breton, so I'm up there quite a bit. But I started half of last year, so I missed the Cape Breton trip. So I haven't been on the bus, like I said, with this current team. So just curious of how the bus rides were for you. But hey, once you get used to it, it seems like nothing, right? And I have a friend with a varsity team, and he's been on a lot of bus rides, man. And I've just, once you get used to it, then hey, it's no big deal. But
yeah, no, I remember from Youngstown, Ohio, 1 year, our closest trip was 11 hours.
Yeah.
Shreveport, Louisiana, and we ended up our farthest trip was 42 hours away to Preston, Arizona.
Oh wow!
So I've been on bus rides all over the U.S. Yep. continent and Canada and all that stuff. So yeah, just like I said, it's part of the game. You know, like you said, it's if you're addicted to it, you're addicted to the game, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and your hockey DB is pretty lengthy with all the teams you've played on, so we'll touch on that in a little bit. But besides your home team barn, what's your favorite barn to visit in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League?
Well, like I said, I know Moose Jaw. Man, I think a lot of the Moose Jaw, I think Medicine Hat, all got new rinks. You know what I mean? Brandon was always fun to go to. I mean, Regina, Pats was always a nice rink to go play in. I mean, yeah, it was Prince Albert Raiders. That's a good rink. I mean, it's still the same one. It's old. It's got great character. They've won a lot of championships, put a lot of players into the NHL. You know, Dave Manson, Baumgartner, Mike Modano, the list goes, Darren Kimball, the list goes on and on. So I mean, you know, all those rinks have history, and with the great players that have played there and went on to have great pro careers as well.
I got to ask, Killer, how was the atmosphere when Wendell Clark got into a fight in those rinks? How small was the rink you and him played in for the Blades?
Well, you know what? I was playing AAA Midget Blazers, so I only got a Like I think I got 4 games called up when I was 15 and 5 games or 5 games the next year or whatever. But yeah, as a 15-year-old, I got to play with Wendell Clark. And when I said that, man, I moved to Saskatoon to play Saskatoon Blazers AAA Midget. So whenever we weren't playing or it was a weekday game, we always got to go to the Blades game. And to watch Wendell, I mean, just he just did it all. I mean, his skating back then was absolutely phenomenal. He played defense. He could skate better backwards than more guys could.
He can still play.
Oh God, yeah.
He comes up here in alumni games with Jackson Events, and man, and I'll touch up on Denny Marouk in a little bit. I believe you played with him in Minnesota or Washington. We'll touch up on Denny Marouk, and he could still play too. And there's a lot of alumni that could still play.
Yeah.
But I was curious of how Wendell was in that rink, and how hard was those punches? I imagine the rink was cold, and he's tough as nails. I just wanted that one Wendell Clark story from you, and I can't imagine being in that Saskatoon Blades rink and seeing Wendell chuck the knuckles.
Yeah, well, that was back in the old barn days downtown, and I think it held about 3,200. And
oh wow,
you know, I mean, the fans. Yeah, I was just on a podcast called the Monday Nooner, and you could smoke back then in the rinks and all that. So it was just like the insulation from the rink, from the roof out on the rafters, it was hamburger and popcorn grease and smoke was just dripping down. But the old barn, it was a lot smaller than a normal rink. So, you know, the GM, Daryl Lubinicki, built around that where, you know, he had physical tough teams and all that stuff. But yeah, Wendell, you know, I watched him getting so many fights, but I remember the one time, I think it was Paul and Chuck, big 6'5" dude, tried to take him on, and Wendell just knocked him out, and there was blood everywhere. It was right by the bench. But yeah, I mean, like I said, Wendell had such a great core balance. And like I said, he threw for hit the hurt, you know, he's going to knock you out. You know, that's how he threw. And he was just an ecstatic player to watch. Like I said, he did everything. And like I said, he brought Saskatoon Blades fans to their feet a lot more than once.
And he never stopped when he made it to the NHL, fighting Bob Probert, fighting Martin McSorley. But do you remember your first fight in the WHL, if there was one fight that you were involved in? Just tell us about your very first fight. I believe I heard a story. I think I'm looking at the right story here. Did you fight Mark Messier at one point during a line brawl?
I did. Yes, I did.
Okay.
It was weird because I was going for a change, and then there was a scrum. So I already had my foot up on the bench to go off. I was tired. And then the boys were saying, "Killer, there's kind of a scrum." So I went back in, and we had Mike Eagles. We had, Mark Tenorti and Craig Berube, and I can't remember, Jim Johnson, I think, was the other one on defense. So I just like, yeah, all those guys can hold their own. So Mark Mess was on another guy, I think on Tenorti, and some other guy was going or trying to get at Tenorti. So I just said, look, I'll let these guys go. I'm tired. So I just kind of grabbed Mark and just kind of, I just wanted to do nothing, but he started chirping. So we started chirping. He threw the first punch and away went at it. And that's how the fight went down. So, whatever. I mean, I respect a player like that, but if he wants to go, let's go.
Which teams were involved? Which team did you play for? And which
that was New York. That was when I was with Washington. We were playing New York Rangers.
And did you know at the time when you skated up to Mark Messier, it was number 11? Or you just grabbed the first guy you...
I just, like I said, there was two guys on Tenorti, so I just grabbed Mark, and I just thought, I'll just take him aside and just do nothing. But like I said, he chirped and turned around and threw the first punch, so I wasn't going to stand there and take many more, so dropped them, and away we went at it.
No, and Mark Messier is a big fella, and I've never seen him fight. And that's an interesting story you just told. You know, you and Mark Messier get into a fight. Never thought he would have been involved in any type of altercation. But going back to your first fight as a Saskatoon Blades, and how was that?
Well, first of all, I wasn't Rangers first. Their best or best fan, I'll tell you that. They despise me. So, but anyway, no, it was just, I got called up, as I said, as a 15-year-old, playing in, called up to go to, Saskatoon. And, so we were in the Prince Albert zone, and we had some pressure on, and it was going back the other way, and right at the red line I got cross-checked from behind, and it was Dave Manson. So,
oh wow,
I turned around at 15, and away we went at her. So
how old was Dave at the time? Was he a veteran in the dub at the time?
Yeah, he would have been probably 19 years old, I guess, probably. So
it's a big, yeah, that's 18, a big 19. Dude. That's a big dude.
Oh, he's a really big dude. So.
Wow. And you just, and at this time you're up against Dave Manson. You're just fresh out of midget AAA, and you're now involved in a altercation with Dave Manson. I can't imagine what was going through your head at the time, but, who came out on the good end and who came out on the bad end?
Oh, well, it was just, yeah, God, it was, well, you know what? I, at 15 years old, I had to wear a cage anyway. So, like I said, turned around and we threw punches and we both fell down, and that was it. But you know what? I think I got a lot of respect from the Raiders, but also I got a lot of respect from my Blade teammates after I fought probably one of the toughest guys in the league. So, did what I had to do and had fun and didn't get hurt. So it was good.
Moving to the American League, who was the toughest guy in the American League that you fought during your time in the American League with the Halifax Citadels?
Oh, gosh, it was.
And you got to think, too, like. 30. Sorry, go ahead.
I just said there were so many tough guys back in the day, right? I mean, I remember in Sherbrooke, I fought both of Reberge, Mario and Serge Roberge. I mean, I ended up playing with Serge in Halifax later on, but Serge was a tough customer. Fought Louis DeBrusque in, I think he was with Cape Breton. Francois Leroux in Cape Breton. I mean, God, I can't remember who all the guys were in St. John's and Fredericton. I mean, oh yeah.
Was Marty McSorley with the Oilers at the time?
No.
Okay.
No. God, I can't remember his name with Fredericton. He was about 6'5", I think. Fought all the heavies that were in the American League, you know, and
Was it Alan Nezradine?
No, it wasn't Alan. Who? Gosh, it was. He was a big defenseman.
Nezradine would be the only guy I could think of that was big and solid on the back end for the Habs or the baby Habs. So, just looking at your hockey DB here, like it was, you know, you played 19 games with the Citadels in 89-90. 91 to 93, and then you moved on to the Washington Capitals. So just tell me about the Minnesota. You played one game in 88-89 with the Minnesota North Stars. So you play one game with the North Stars, then you're back down to Saskatoon. So how was that for you? Like, how was that first game in the NHL being called up from the
Saskatoon? Well, no, actually, I made Minnesota out of camp when I went to camp. That's who I was drafted by. Was a Minnesota North Stars, 48th overall. I wasn't even supposed to get drafted. So I made Minnesota. We went on a road trip. I think we played Quebec and then Montreal, and that's where I got to play my very first NHL game, was in the Montreal Forum. So then, like I said, I can't remember where else we played. I didn't play. And then we went back to Minnesota. They kept me around for another week. And then they decided to send me back to Saskatoon and work on my skating and work on my game, I wanted to stay in Minnesota, but I was okay because we were hosting Memorial Cup that year as well with the Blades. So which we ended up losing in overtime to Swift Current that year. It was a great thrill. It was a dream come true, not only to play your first game, but also as a kid growing up in Saskatchewan, hockey night in Canada on Saturday, you either watch the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs play. And just the history in the Forum in Montreal with, the 26 banners, whatever it was at the time, and all the Rocket Richard, the jerseys, all retired, the greats that went through there. It was a great thrill and a great honor to play the very first game in the Montreal Forum.
Just tell the offside viewers about your time in Halifax. How was Halifax as a whole, and how was Robby Fatorik?
I'll tell you what, I had great years in Halifax. The coaches that were there, like you said, I think you can see the numbers that I put up. I think 64 points in like 70 games, and another good year there. Like I think it was Doug Carpenter.
92, 90.
And then Robby Fatorik, whatever. They really gained a lot of confidence. They let me play. They showed me a lot of little different nuances of the game for back then. They give me power play. They give me penalty kill. They 5-on-5. They let me do my thing. But I like the other part of that game too. A little too much. And they always told me, Kevin, just play the game. Let the bigger guys take care of the other festivities. But like I said, I would think I was always there for my teammates no matter what happened. I tried to do a little bit of everything to be a complete 200-foot player.
No, and you're in 92-93, you were fourth in team scoring with 79 games played, 27 goals, 37 assists, 64 points with a whopping 345 penalty minutes. You don't see that now in the NHL. You don't see a player that's fourth in team scoring with 345 penalty minutes. So it just goes to show like how much the game has changed from, the 90s and the 2000s when, fighting was a thing. But like I said earlier in the show, about 2005 or so, the Colton Lohrs of the NHL were kind of, and the AHL for that matter, were kind of just, slowly fading, right? So it's, you don't see that nowadays. Like I said, you see more of the Tom Wilsons or the guys who can score 20 goals and also get into a fight. I gotta ask. Sorry, go ahead, Killer.
No, I just, like I said, it was a different era back then. I mean, you know, like I said, it was, I think, a lot more hard nose. I think the physicality is, you know, up there, but not in the physical presence, more of the hitting and that as well, just because the guys are so much in better shape with speed and all that stuff as well. But like I said, it was that time of the era that I played in, and thought I adjusted and said I tried to do a little bit of everything on the offensive side and the other side. As Dale Hunter always told me in Washington, he says, "Killer," says, "if you're not moving the numbers up on the left-hand column, you better be moving up numbers on the right-hand side of the column." He says, "You got to be doing something." So that's what I kind of always stuck to.
So staying on the topic of the Halifax Citadels, I'm good friends with Trevor Steinberg, who just recently stepped down from the SMU varsity men's hockey team here in Halifax. Can you tell me a Trevor Steinberg story?
Trevor Steinberg, well, first of all, great old roommate back in Halifax. Steiny was a great character, great leader, you know, and just a great teammate. I mean, both on and off the ice. And I just want to congratulate Steiny on, you know, a hell of a career at St. Mary's. You know, he did a fantastic job. And you know, I still keep in contact with him, catch up with him once in a while. And like I said, we reminisce about the old days, and it's fun. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, so I don't know really any crazy stories. I just know we had some fun downtown right outside of the rink in Halifax. Cheers and Lawrence of Oregano's and all that stuff. So
I was gonna ask, do you have a favorite club in Halifax in the 90s?
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's probably not around anymore, but hey, just give the viewers a cool or a good bar story with you and Steiny.
Well, cheers was always Cheers was always a great, great place to start. And then Saturday, though, if we had a rare day off on a Saturday, you have to go to Peddler's Pub.
I will tell you, I'm 37 years old. So Peddler's was the place to go. They had cheap pitchers. We'd go there all the time. World Juniors and Peddler's was there. Pitchman's was right across from the Prince George there, really close to the rink, above the building on the bottom half was a place called Pitchman's, where I used to go. And yeah, Cheers was the place I used to go. You know, it's now a different place. And I've heard tons of stories of certain places that guys went to. Like, I've talked to Chris Nyland. The Voyagers were before the Citadels time, but you know, the place called the Lighthouse down on Barrington, and the old Piccadilly and all them places. But I miss those places. So do you have a favorite place that you and Steiny used to go to that, you know, just could relax and, you know, have a beverage and just relax? And do you have a place?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably, like I said, Cheers was a good place. The Elbow Room too. I don't know if that was there when you were around. The Elbow Room was right across Cheers, or from Cheers. You know, and we used to go to Peddler's to eat quite a bit too. I mean, it was great food down there. But Peddler's on a Saturday, I mean, it was lined up out the door. Oh, wow. By 11:30, because it opened at noon, and the whole city of Halifax was going to Peddler's. So God, I remember just having lots of fun. I mean, I think it was Kenny, Alex, and the Swell Guys who used to play Saturday night at Peddler's. They were a great band. They were a hilarious band. They had a lot of fun, brought the crowd into it. I remember just drinking out of the Bird Dog, rest in peace, Bird Dog, drinking out of his cowboy.
I was going to talk about him, Greg Smith, man. I know Terry Ryan's, him and Terry Ryan are great friends, Bird Dog playing in St. John's. And yeah, I was going to mention that, just some of the your favorite teammates with the Citadels. But yeah, the clubs, their club scene has changed. I'm a little bit older now, and it was back in the Mem Cup in 2019 when I was downtown last. So the Mem Cup won't be around for maybe 20 years or so. And
right,
I'm gonna ask you too about the 100th Memorial Cup in Regina. But do you have a favorite Citadels teammate besides Steiny?
Oh gosh, I mean, you know what? It was just been John Tanner. Kind of got a bunch of the old Citadels together. John Tanner, Ivan Matulik is on there. Ken McRae, Trigger. Who else? We got Patrick Levesque. There's a whole bunch of guys that John Tanner kind of put us in a group that we catch up on, the guys and all that stuff. But I mean, Bird Dog was a special dude, man. He was like I said, he'd go to war for you. He had that he cared for you, you know. He had the craziness, but he freaking loved you as a teammate. And he, like I said, he would do anything to help you out. And that was kind of the same way as Steiny. I mean, Ken McRae, Trigger was a great teammate. God, Gerald Bisdell, Serge Roberge. I mean, Stéphane Charbonneau, you know, all these guys, Danny Chassé, I remember, you know, just, you know, I mean, these guys that you played with, like I said, they're, you know, you think about it from time to time. And it's kind of neat with, you know, the social media. Now you can kind of catch up on your old teammates once in a while, just to see how they're doing. So, but yeah, I, like I said, it, Halifax was, a great 4 years for me. You know, I still have a lot of friends there. Barry Studley, who was our stick boy. We see each other on Facebook pretty much every day. Chris Larson, who's done so much for the community, in Halifax. And, you know, like I said, there's so many guys that, you know, I can't name off the top of my head, but I still keep in contact with, see on Facebook. And like I said, Halifax was a great city to play in, you know, and just, obviously they're doing well with the Mooseheads now. And unfortunately, too bad pro hockey couldn't, stuck around, because it was a great city to play in.
No, and many people have said the same thing. You know, if the Voyagers kind of went downhill in the 80s, and if a team stuck around, because it's funny, because I believe when the Voyagers left, I think it was 84 when the Voyagers left, they moved to Sherbrooke. Sherbrooke then goes on to win the Calder Cup with an average of 3,000 fans. And, you know, when the Mooseheads came in 94, it junior A just in Halifax became obsolete, and it's too bad. But hey, it's been 27 odd years, and we've won a Memorial Cup, so it's been a great ride. But hey, yeah, you're right. Chris Larson, I talked to quite a bit, and he's part of the U Sports, and Fred McGilvery, and all those gentlemen that have brought great things to Halifax. And whether a CFL team comes to Halifax, it's yet to be determined. But hey, we've got the right people to make this happen for the city of Halifax. It's just such a great place, and I hope the CFL comes. But hey, that's a conversation for another day. But do you have anything else to add to your AHL? And I'm going to ask before we do take off, how was playing in Orlando? Did you ever imagine growing up as a kid playing for the Las Vegas Thunder or the Orlando Solar Bears? Like, did you ever think growing up, I'm going to end up playing hockey in a sand-filled, well, they're not called the province, a sand-filled state, I guess you could call them.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't even a thought back then. I mean, you know what, actually, both those years, well, obviously, you know, it was kind of a injured season in Vegas with two major injuries. You know, took the puck to the face there by Peter Nedved, and you know, 85 miles an hour, shattered my whole right side of my face, two plates, 12 screws, 140 stitches, lost a little bit of vision. So I was out for quite a while. I came back and then blew out my knee and had to have surgery. And then in Orlando, I think I only played five games. I had my last concussion, and the doctor told me, your career's done. And he told me, actually, it was on March 13th on my birthday. So it wasn't a good birthday celebration then. But you know what, I was blessed to play 11 years pro. You know, and again, got to win a Calder Cup with the Portland Pirates of the Washington Capitals farm team. Played with some great coaches, obviously. Played with so many great teammates wherever I played. And like I said, it's been a great ride. Hockey's treated me very, very well, and given me a life that I can't thank enough for. And, you know, and now I get to pass it on, just like all those coaches did pass their knowledge on to me. And said it's been 21 years coaching now. And, you know, it's good to be back home after 27 years in the USA. And like I said, I'm excited to be in LaRonge. It's a great community. You know, it's the only really thing they have to do in the winter is to watch hockey besides ice fishing, hunting, and snowmobiling. So, so like I said, they enjoy their hockey. I think we brought last year, you know, the 3 years before they only had 28 wins. Last year we had 33 wins. And we did every promo we could. We brought the community back to the Mel, which was the Mel Hagelin Arena. And, you know, they were only getting 200 fans a game before that. And by the end of the season and playoffs, we were just about getting sellouts we're getting close to 1,000 people, and a sellout's 1,100. So we made some big strides. And when we started off good this year with being 4-1, unfortunately, again, the second wave of COVID hit and kind of shut down. So we're hoping and praying for good news on January 15th.
No, and I hope you guys are playing. We don't know when we're going to restart, sometime maybe late January. But which year did you win the Calder Cup with Portland?
93-94. It was when they first moved from the Baltimore. They were the Baltimore Skipjacks. They moved to Portland, Maine. So
how was Barry Trotz as a coach?
Trotz is awesome. He's just like one of the boys, but he's demanding. He's firm. You know, and both him and Paul Gardner, just great dudes. They had a great chemistry, worked well together. And, like I said, we had that was an excellent team. I mean, that we had, you know, our goalies, Ole Kolzig, and our backup was Byron Defoe.
Oh, wow. Because it's showing here, Byron Defoe played 47 games and Olaf Kolzig played 29. And you're saying Byron Defoe was the backup, or
in playoffs he was, yes.
Oh wow! And you can't go wrong with those two NHL goalies, Byron Defoe having a great career with Boston and a few other teams, and
yeah,
Olaf Kolzig actually played here in Halifax and went on to a great career playing with the Washington Capitals. But
he was MVP of the playoffs that year, so he was Yeah, it was an awesome year. It was, like I said, it was great, great, many, many players that went on to have good careers in the NHL.
And you had 39 games. You had 32 points with 263 minutes in penalties. Man, and you played with John Slaney. You got to play with some pretty cool Newfoundlander. So I can only imagine how what those parties were like when you guys did get the party, because I know Newfies can party. So
that they can.
I actually have Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders to win the Stanley Cup. He's an amazing coach, and you got to play under Barry Trotz. That's a huge accomplishment, and you have an AHL ring to go with your career, man. So anything else you'd like to add and just add to this conversation?
I guess the story with Steiny and Halifax. Okay, this is when we would go out after games. I had these tea made, right? And I would kind of, all the boys would be on one side of the wall or kind of by the corner. I'd be by myself, and I put my teeth in.
Yeah.
All right. So on there, they're molded to my mouth, and I stand over, and the girls would walk by, and I kind of tap them on the shoulder. I said, "Hey, would you like to go dance?" And they would just look, and they would look back, and they would run as fast as they could to wherever they were going. Man, it was we had a lot of laughs with the fake teeth back in Halifax, and still got them. And it was just a little joke that we used to have fun with.
But you guys are the hot shots in Halifax. Like, even though it was an AHL team, that was the biggest ticket in Halifax. And, you know, I don't imagine the girls were really cared about your looks and all that stuff in Halifax. Like, wow, you played with the Halifax Citadels. They would have been head over heels and wanting to dance without hesitation.
We had a little bit of fun with the false teeth, and the boys would get a kick out of it watching the girls just kind of shake their head and like, what kind of teeth are those? And they would be off running. So
no Trevor Steinberg stories that can be told on
Steiny was a very calm roommate, man. We would actually a lot of times we'd sit up and talk, and we both loved country music, so we would listen to country music and whatever, have a few moosehead beer and just kind of...
Moosehead beer is huge in Halifax.
Alex, it is.
Were you able to try an Alexander Keith's?
No, because we were sponsored by Moosehead.
Oh, so during your whole time in Halifax, you never once had an Alexander Keith's?
I was very, very loyal to my team and teammates and the sponsorships in Halifax. And Moosehead... sponsored us very, very well.
Wow. I've had quite a few Alexander Keiths over my time, but you played here for 4 years, and I find that hard to believe. But hey, that's, if you guys are sponsored by Moosehead, then you have to drink it. But I've noticed on Facebook, Kevin, your clothing line. Just tell the viewers how people can get a hold of the clothing that you have to offer on your on your Facebook. Is there a website that people...
Yeah, just I guess it's the Killer Hockey 23 logo. God, I started way back in when I took over Barry Trotz's hockey school in Portland, Maine, when he left there, I think, to go to Nashville. And I bought his and Killer Hockey School. And so just a buddy of mine, Ryan Mulhern, made this logo up for me, and it's been a big hit. I've been very, very busy during the winter holidays here, posting some new stuff that I got in, and so I've just been taking all those to the mail, delivering them, you know, Slovakia and all over the States and all over Canada. Just so you can go to killer-hockey.com. If you're interested in some killer swag,
I'm gonna jump on that train in the new year. And I know I'm part of a couple other things here, and I've got boxes of stuff here from players, and I'm trying to promote, especially now with my podcast just getting up off the ground. And I know Chris Nyland has some cool stuff too. So it's great to see that the old ex alumni offering clothing and just something on the side away from coaching, or an island is with TSN and your coach, the L'Orange Ice Wolves. So,
and actually I'll just, Jamie, just another thing with the clothing line, I have a buddy in Saskatoon here, you know, his lost his brother to suicide. And so for every item that I sell, I donate $1 to Love My Mind Mental Health in Saskatoon. So it kind of, I knew his brother, and you know, kind of hits home. And you know, kind of the same thing with you know, I got to know a lot of people in the States. I'm a very the Wounded Warrior Project and all that stuff. And like I said, you know, they come back with mental illnesses and all that stuff, or mental health issues, and just trying to, again, do a part by giving back to those warriors as well. And I know, you know, kind of know what they're going through as a retired due to concussions. And, you know, took a little over 2 years to kind of get back on track. And, you know, you know, like I said, it's just, it's a struggle. And when we struggle, we don't, we think we can handle it, and we don't ask for help. And, you know, please ask for help. You know, you can always message me or email me. I can give you my email address, and we can just sit and talk and help you get through another day. And that's what it's about. It's you know, it's that's a pandemic itself, the mental health everywhere. And you know, hopefully we can one day understand it, and we can get a hold or a grip on it as well.
And I know everyone wants 2020 to end because of COVID, and we want to go, we want 2021 to start on a good note. We'll still be living with COVID into 2021 for however long, but I strongly believe that, you know, this pandemic has brought people closer together. People hadn't had time prior to COVID to go on Zoom to connect, and viewers listening to tonight's conversation with you won't see the hat I'm wearing. I'm wearing a Regina Pats hat. You know, I have no words to describe how much I've been connected to Regina, the Rod Peterson Show. And the last couple months, I've gotten the opportunity to spend 2 hours, or some days I'm busy, but I do follow afterwards. And I will watch that video with you and Rod on his show. And man, it's been a blessing. Like, I won't take much of your time talking about the Rod Peterson Show, but man, it just went, it's unbelievable how his journey has inspired me. And Chris Nyland, I look up to. I've now become friends with yourself and Theron Fleury. Those, you know, every individual that's come out, I've been able to connect with. And man, like, I can't say enough good things about the Rod Peterson Show. It's Canada's version of the View, and it's brought people together. You're able to go on, you can chime in, you can add your opinion. And this couldn't have come out of it. Rod Peterson Show was going before COVID, but now it's amazing.
God, yeah, I've done more Zoom calls during COVID, man. And yep. I'm computer literate, but I've done more Zoom calls during COVID than I don't know what, man. So, and I was just gonna say, you must have lost the bet with Rod Peterson to be wearing that hat. That's all I gotta say.
No, one day I was checking the mail, and I don't know if someone, I don't know how they got my address. I do have friends in Saskatchewan. I have reached out to a lot of SJHL individuals that cover the league. There was a day where I had like 3 or 4 boxes of stuff, and I didn't check the top left corner to see what the address was. I was just kind of like, oh, I got a box of this, and getting all sorts of stuff now from Saskatchewan because of the Rod Peterson show. I've got my Rod Peterson tumbler here. So
there you go. Perfect.
He's been a huge fan, and I received this Regina Pat set that I'm wearing. I will show a picture to all the offside Twitter followers of the hat I'm wearing and the tonight's conversation. But
well, Rod's a good dude, man. He's awesome. He does a great job, and it's always good to follow him as well.
And I'm not the person to, you know, say things just to, you know, to make someone smile. He's been a true blessing for all Canada, and I just want to talk about Dale Hubley, a friend that I've gotten to know, and that's another story for another day about people now collecting hockey cards once again because of COVID and collecting hockey jerseys. Shout out to Dale Hubley and his amazing collection of old Citadels and Voyager jerseys. It's so for you, for those of you listening, I'll have a link there how to see that collection. But do you still have any jerseys or pucks or anything hockey related, like Citadels or any of your old AHL, NHL? Do you have any? I'm just curious. That's why I brought up the Dale Hubley.
Dale's collection there is absolutely outstanding, man. That's phenomenal. Hats off to him for doing that. That's a lot of history, and it's just amazing what all that he collected. But for myself, yeah, I've got a jersey from every team that I've played on, and then some. And I'm a big collector myself in memorabilia. I got quite a bit of stuff that I got kicking around, and nice to have those connections get it when I was playing in the NHL.
When it comes time for you to part with your jersey, and I don't imagine you're ever going to sell anything you have that's dear to your heart, but I'm going to have to fight Dale Hubley over it. I'm a Kevin Kaminsky fan. And like you said, this COVID it brought good to Canadians. It's gotten people closer together, and never in a million years I thought I'd be connecting with, you know, ex-Citadels players. Or, man, it's opened the doors to getting this podcast off the ground, and take advantage of it, because once COVID becomes long gone, people are going to be back at the rinks playing hockey with their teams. Either if it's, and the alumni they're going to be busy with events, and you're going to be busy coaching. So take advantage of it while you can, and I've gone through mental health and connect with people that you never thought you would connect with, right? It's just take advantage of it. And especially during Christmas and the holidays, you know, I know some of us aren't allowed to go to the rink, but hey, let's stay positive. And man, you've been a great mentor in the last week or two that I've gotten to know you. And man, it's just such a cool feeling to know that guys are available that have played hockey to be able to reach out. So I've got nothing else to say, but man, thank you very, very much for joining me. And I know everyone in Halifax here is going to be tickled pink knowing that I had Kevin Kaminsky on this evening.
Well, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I mean, I think as a player that I've been retired for what, 21 years, we still got to carry the game. We still got to give back, whether it's charity or whether it's taking the time to talk to all the people on the podcast and hear your story and talk about where you're at and what team you're coaching, all that kind of stuff. Like I said, I think we still got to carry the game and let people, you know, like I said, the people that used to watch us, like I said, they're they're on their, you know, unfortunately, they're on the way out, right? And who's going to remember us once those people, you know, like I said, with my killer hockey, I get older people that all want my stuff. I don't get very many kids unless I sell it at a hockey school. I get all my old fans that watch me at the Blades and Washington and Halifax. There's a guy just got some stuff from Halifax, you know, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Fresno, California, just places where I've coached and where I played. You know, they're the ones buying the stuff that used to, like I said, used to watch me. It's not the youth growing up right now that are buying it.
Well, you see the stuff behind me. I have these two pucks here, these two Citadel's pucks, and on the back of one it says the old. It's got the old Metro Center, and then this one's game used from Dwayne Norris.
So I've got, oh, nice, old Norrie.
Yeah, I'll have to talk to you again in the new year. I want to hear about Dwayne Norris, a great Newfoundlander. And as you can see in the background here in my basement, I'm starting to hoard pucks again because of COVID. So
perfect.
Yeah. So we'll be in touch. I'm going to try to snag something from you probably in the new year. Just to say, hey, I got a piece of Kevin Kaminsky memorabilia. So that's all, man. This has been a great episode of the OI at Offside Hockey Talk podcast, man. It's been a treat, and I know the viewers listening in Halifax are going to be tickled pink when drops in January.
On Jamie, and it was an honor. And again, all the people in Halifax, I just want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and stay safe and healthy during these crazy times, man. And again, enjoy your loved ones. Thank you very much.
Not a problem, man. You've been a huge inspiration. It's, you know, all the guys that have fought their way up through the WHL, Q, and AHL, and they're inspiring individuals. And people forget, you know, it's unfortunate. Everyone thinks, you know, thinks of the MacKinnons and the Crosbys and the Wayne Gretzkys, and people forget about, you know, Dave Semenko and you know, the Kaminskys and the Chris Nylands and the Steinbergs. They forget about the guys that fought the way up, and some guys had it easier than others, but man, you really need to expose the guys that are, you know, that are forgotten, right? And it's, man, it's just such an inspiration to know that someone like yourself is available, and people can reach out to you. So how can people find you? Just provide the viewers with an email or some sort of contact that they can
you know what, probably just go to my Instagram. I think Facebook, I've got 5,000 followers, so probably got to get rid of some, but go to Instagram, okay. You know, killer2332, and that's my handle, and I'll add you on or message me, and if you need to talk about anything, mental health or whatever, I'll be around, man.
No, I'm gonna stay connected 100%. I don't have Instagram, but I'm on Twitter quite a bit, and
I don't even know. I got a handle, but I don't even know how to use it. So
no, I'm gonna have this episode drop in January. I'm gonna have your contacts. I'm gonna have a link on how people can find your clothing, man. And it's, again, thank you very much for joining me tonight, Kevin.
No problem, Jamie. I appreciate it, man. So have yourself a Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. You as well. And to all the Kaminskys, have a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
You got it. Take care.